Welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are live from Maya Cinemas in Las Vegas to talk about Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. And joining me, I've got a great lineup of guests. We've got Michael Keane returning to the show, Joe Black returning to the show, and newcomer Sam Novak. We have a very fun, a little bit contentious conversation about Godzilla X Kong and about a whole bunch of great puzzle pieces. And thank you to everybody who came out for the live show. We had a great turnout, probably our best one yet. And we got more live shows on the way, so keep an eye out. News coming very soon on the next couple, and I hope we'll see you out at some of them. Before we get to it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Piecing Pod, and don't forget to join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And with that said, let's get to this conversation about Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. All right, so we are the Piecing It Together podcast. We're about to talk about this movie we just watched, Godzilla X Kong, or as I'm being told, it's called Godzilla Kong. The X is silent. But anyway, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. We're going to get into some movies that might have inspired this movie that we just watched. But first, I want to introduce my guest here, starting off, newbie to the show, Sam Novak. Sam, introduce yourself to everybody here.
Hi, Sam Novak. I'm a resident of Las Vegas. I originally came from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm an entertainment writer for a website called Vegas411.
Absolutely. And a big Kong fan, right?
Yes, very much so.
Right on. Right on. Me too. And very happy to have you here. Next to you is Michael Keane, current champion of live shows of Piecing It Together. He's been on more than anyone, I think. But Michael, always happy to have you here.
I'm still shocked you asked me.
Tell people who don't know who you are what you do.
Literally, like, probably no one in this theater knows who I am. I'm a writer and director, and I make a bunch of smutty movies like The Head from 2019, now available on Tubi.
There you go.
Because it's the easiest one to get onto. And Fatal Future, available in various places sometimes. And got a new one about a vagina bed. Kids, don't worry about it. That's called Dr. Deathface, and that's coming, I don't know, whenever the distributor decides they want to put it out.
There were some visuals in this movie that might have fit that movie as well.
There were some CG, sort of pusses in there.
Let's go to Joe Black over there. I've been on the show 100 times probably at this point, and was on the Godzilla versus Kong episode, so I'm very happy he drove in from LA for this.
Yeah, I was honored to be on that episode, and honored to be on this one too. So
yeah. Tell people about you. You're a filmmaker.
I'm a filmmaker, Los Angeles based. Our last two films that I've made with my wife, who's in the audience, Suffrage and Natasha Hall, are both available on Tubi as well and Amazon. It's a comedic detective series, and we're hoping to make a third one, and we're getting ready to make another film called Best Cult Ever. So look for that soon, too.
Right on, right on. Well, let's start getting into this one. I like to start these things off just by throwing, we call them puzzle pieces for anyone here who's never listened to the podcast before. A puzzle piece is a movie or sometimes a TV show or something else, some other piece of media that we think might have inspired this movie in some way. And when we talked about Godzilla versus Kong back in 2021, of course, we talked about Batman the Superman, you know, as far as these two just mythic characters fighting over something. And then you just knew walking into it, they were going to get together in the end to fight some bigger foe. And it was pretty obvious from the get-go, and it happened, and it was really fun. I mean, I think all of us on this panel loved Godzilla versus Kong, but that all that is being said to say that this one would then be Justice League, because now they are already buddies at this point. They've got a contentious relationship, as Batman and Superman did in Justice League, but they've got a much bigger threat to deal with. They also have new team members, as we see. I didn't really know Mothra was going to be a part of this movie. I didn't know, you know, Baby Kong was going to have such a big part. You know, I certainly didn't know there was going to be this Ice Godzilla. I didn't write down his name. I'm sure somebody...
Something like Shima?
Something like that, yeah. don't know.
All I know is Kong is tapping that frozen ass.
So, Justice League is our first puzzle piece here. I'm just going to like take a wild guess and say no one on this panel is like a super big fan of that movie. I mean, it was...
Which cut?
Yeah, that's a good question. I preferred the bigger, longer Zack Snyder one to the theatrical one for sure.
I preferred the theatrical one for sure.
There you go.
Most definitely, because it was shorter and had more color. And I don't know, like that movie was a good movie for 10-year-olds. And I felt like the Snyder cut was was infantile. I don't know. I thought it was really whack.
Well,
it also has that beautiful line at the end of the Whedon cut that the Snyder one doesn't have, where Lois Lane is typing up her little letter and she says, darkness, true darkness is not the absence of light, but the conviction that the light will never return. You know what I mean? And I remember thinking that was like really powerful actually. And like, and the Snyder cut didn't have that. It didn't have, I don't know. Yeah.
There's a lot of light in this movie, by the way. Bright, blinding lights coming at you. But no, you said something, not to go on like too much of a tangent, but a movie for 10-year-olds. I was cackling my ass off through this whole movie. I loved it, but this is a movie for 10-year-olds.
Absolutely.
Like 100%. I don't know. Let's, before we get to other puzzle pieces, Sam, what did you think about this movie as far as, especially in that sense of it being a movie for kids, basically?
Oh, definitely a movie for kids. I was kind of concerned how I'd feel about it after having just seen Godzilla Minus One so many times and being astounded at how they took a serious approach that actually worked within that realm. And I think anybody who went there that wouldn't even be a Godzilla fan would be kind of surprised at the angle that they took that went over so well.
Sure, yeah.
So with this one falling on the opposite side of that, I was quite concerned how I would react to it.
Yeah.
And what I thought I would feel is exactly how I ended up feeling. Mm. I was like, okay, I can't wait for this to be over and the next new Godzilla Minus One to come out.
All right. So you weren't feeling the pure goofy ridiculousness of
I
this
love
movie.
Absolutely goofy films. Uh-huh. And I told you before I came to see this tonight, I was watching the previous one at home on a 3D monitor.
Yeah.
And as ridiculous as it was still a lot of fun. Mm. This one just had me, you know, covering my eyes thinking, this is just 30 comic books rolled up and shoved down the throat.
It's a lot of comic books rolled up and shoved down the throat. You could definitely say that.
So I'll just say that it had a lot of color and sound to it.
Yeah, it did have a lot of color and sound. What about you, Michael?
Well, to your previous thing about the Justice League, like you, I also hate color.
Yeah.
in film, I just realized I should put a reference in that. Whoops.
I keep bringing him back.
Yeah. I promised before this that I would not come to the screening super high.
I think that's the way to watch this. But I
did not do that. And I felt like I was taking crazy pills for a second there until this fine chap spoke up. I was, oh God, like past act one. Oh, I fucking hated that.
Wow. Okay.
I was not a fan. Okay. I love me some Godzilla. I appreciate me some Kong. I hope I never watch that again.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting because the way you just put it, you're more of a Godzilla guy, and I know Sam's more of a Kong guy. Both of you didn't really like it. Joe, I feel like you had a good time with this one.
Oh, I thought it was like terrific. And I actually thought Godzilla Minus One sucked.
Fuck is happening?
Well, here's why. It's because, I mean, it was funny. I mean, not the best source for some people, but John Landis once said to me, a movie can be dumb and a movie can be boring, but a movie can't be dumb and boring. And I thought that the acting in Godzilla Minus One was just like so incredibly awful that it kept me at an arm's distance. I thought it took forever to get to where it was going. And once it got there, that's when it decided to get dumb. That the third act of that movie that we're all talking about being like this kind of realistic take ends with them tying off 50 ships to either side of this thing to like suck Godzilla down in an air bubble. That's stupid. And like, that's okay. Stupid is okay. But at that point, I was an hour and 40 minutes into a poorly acted, poorly paced nothing of a movie. And I was offended that it got to that point. And then once you get to him ejecting out of the ejector seat to fly into Godzilla or whatever, like they had to ruin that with he knew that he could eject out of the seat, the main character in that movie.
Yeah.
And the whole point of his arc is that he's supposed to find the courage, you know, and the reason to do that. And they rob him of that in the last minute by him deciding, knowing he can eject from Godzilla, that takes away that heroic moment.
But that's not his arc in the movie.
Right, because they took it away from him.
Right, but his arc in the movie is recognizing he doesn't have to do that.
And finding a reason to live, because he said, as far as I feel like I'm already dead and this is all just a dream.
They gave him a reason to live because the woman survived a nuclear blast that launched her.
Disagree.
600
That's
feet.
Very plainly from the first... I mean, this isn't a minus one podcast, but...
Yeah, it's inevitable we're going to talk about minus one after the year it just had.
It's an inherent part of that movie's structure. Like, the entire movie is about this guy going from... I really need to kill myself for my country to actually, this chick's pretty dope and I technically have a child.
Was it
and
not about spoilers, finding courage? Was it not supposed to be that he felt ashamed for the fact that he didn't go through with this
thing?
No,
because the whole thing's an indictment of Japan, like at that time.
So you're saying that his arc is supposed to be, I have a wife and kids, so I shouldn't be doing this.
No, that's not at all.
He found his courage to do that.
By ejecting at the last minute?
No, it was his idea to find that pilot, to reface his own demons, and to correct a bunch of wrongs.
What wrongs?
By not doing anything originally on the island.
What could he have done on the island? See, that's what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about by dumb and boring. That he couldn't do anything on the island.
Okay.
It doesn't matter if he has courage or not.
You're wrong.
He couldn't have done anything on the island?
No, that's not okay.
He could have done something.
If I can for 1 second. And then I promise we can get back to the fucking this piece of shit. So in Godzilla Minus One, and mind you, I only got to see it once because I'm a 4-year-old. In Godzilla Minus One, during that sequence on the island, he's a pussy, right?
Is that what it is? It's not that he has no chance at going up against a giant monster with no protection.
It wasn't even giant
at that
point. It's that
he's a pussy.
Okay. I was being facetious. I'm sorry that is not...
Story of your life.
I don't know what that means.
Can I sit closer to you?
Let's
okay.
Closer.
It's... when I say he's a pussy, I thought that you would get the subtext of that, but apparently subtext is very challenging.
Yes, the subtext of Godzilla Minus One is so hard to comprehend.
Apparently. I thought it was pretty...
So about Justice League, guys.
Snyder Cut was fine. Yeah. The first one was bright. Yeah. And I would say I would rather watch both than rewatch this movie, because it was mostly just CGI bullshit. Actually, and that's... what drove me nuts about this film, Kong is boring as shit, but that's beside the point. That's beside the point.
Nah.
So I'm already starting off okay, you show me some sweet Godzilla action, and then, oh, he's gonna recharge. Yeah, he does that a lot. He likes to recharge so we can not have that CGI budget. Great. And then it's just the lost world in this awful CGI hellscape. Full of monkeys, which I don't mind, some monkeys, but I thought legitimately that the big twist in the movie going in would be that Scargiver, is that the right? Whatever the fuck,
yeah,
the lanky monkey, the ginger monkey. I thought that the ginger monkey would be a diversion, that we would have something interesting happen at some point in the film. And there was a point where I was like, well, this is definitely... We've gotten to the midpoint, because I'm pretty sure the midpoint is probably where Kong gets his arm thing and Godzilla goes pink, which is a great look for him, by the way.
Yeah, it looks great. He looks great.
Godzilla Barbie.
That's,
absolutely.
I think, Goku, or did Vegeta do it? I don't remember if Vegeta ever did it better. Vegeta might have done it better. Rest in peace, Akira Toriyama. But I thought there had to be something more to it. And as we got to that point where they're definitely at their lowest moment, I was like, fuck, we're at the end of the second act. Where the fuck was the story? Which is weird because there's so many fucking threads in this thing that don't need to be there.
I want to get on to more puzzle pieces. I do just want to say, as far as, because I didn't give my opinion on Godzilla Minus One. Yeah. Well, and I mean, everybody has big opinions here. And I liked Godzilla Minus One a lot. I'd rather watch these creatures doing dumb shit like this than watch Godzilla Minus One.
And that's very fair.
You know, I think it's a great movie, but I had so much fun with this movie. And... this is exactly what I want to see King Kong and Godzilla doing. These guys smashing shit. These guys smashing each other. These guys teaming up and being cartoon characters. Like, this is it. This is exactly. And that's why I think Adam Wingard, the director, who also did Godzilla versus Kong, let him make as many of these as he can, because he gets it. He gets exactly what is so inherently fun about these two guys.
Wait, is that how you say his name?
It's Wingard.
Is it Wingard?
Okay, thank Wingard. God. I thought, yeah. I was already going crazy, and now I was like, I'm in a fucking Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah. He definitely has a love for movies. I know when I was listening to the podcast, the last one, I don't think either of you had seen The Guest yet.
No.
Yeah, no, I'm not a big Dan Stevenson fan. Like, it's hard for me to get into, but I liked him in this quite a bit, actually.
Well, he
knew the assignment.
He was terrific in The Guest, and that movie, even though it was kind of like a mixture of The Terminator and, it had a lot of different elements in it, but it was layered with things from other movies, talking about puzzle pieces. There's a really significant throwback to Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
In that one?
Deliberately inserted in the climax of The Guest.
Okay.
It takes place on Halloween, and there's this big prom with an elaborate kind of a path for the guest to go into.
Sure.
And on one wall are the three masks from Halloween 3.
Okay.
And there's a lot of techno music, just like Carpenter wrote for Halloween 3, and it was an obvious nod. And he does tend to layer his films with things like that because he loves the movie so much.
Yeah, yeah. He clearly is a guy who, and that's actually going to come up with one of the puzzle pieces I want to bring up later, but a guy who just loves to play in these particular worlds. And that's what I have so much fun with that. But let's go on to some more pieces. What do you have for your first piece, Sam?
First one that I thought was really obvious was the 1986 King Kong Lives.
Okay.
Because you did have the small Kong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You had Kong getting medical procedures.
Sure.
You had the female scientist who worked for a government agency.
Okay.
Yeah, and you had the roguish kind of adventurer who came kind of at the beginning of the movie and was pseudo love interest for Linda Hamilton's character.
Mm.
You know, he wore the loud shirts, had the swagger, and that's Dan Stevens' character in this.
Yeah, yeah.
So Rebecca Hall is directly Linda Hamilton and Brian Kerwin, Dan Stevens.
Yeah, absolutely. King Kong in general, you always go into like all of the adventure movie things, but King Kong Lives like really smashes a lot of them together. So,
and there was a lot of taking on reptiles, and you had the pursuit of different kind of species after them. You had the big open heart surgery, which was ridiculous because after the surgery, there's no scar there.
Yeah, of
course. That was very, very cheesy.
Yeah.
But, and then at the end, Kong mates and has a little baby Kong. And so that was all just cherry picked for this movie, I think.
But he didn't use that baby Kong as a weapon against a bunch of other Kongs at the beginning.
Well, it wasn't his. He just found the kid. It's an orphan. Who cares?
God, I was hoping so much beyond hope that he would brutally murder that little Diddy Kong.
He was a little brat.
Piece of shit. That might have been, I don't know what was the worst part, honestly, but that was pretty close.
You're losing the audience with baby Kong murder here.
Look, he was like, what, like 30 stories tall? He was an asshole.
I will say 30 stories. That's one negative of this movie. The scale is nonsense. There's no scale.
We talked about that. The ice creature.
Yeah.
It's gigantic to everybody. Then he's riding him like
he's
a horse.
He's like a horse. Yeah.
Then they're all the same size.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't even try to make that scale work. But whatever. Who cares? It's a cartoon. But
I care.
Yeah, I know. Mike cares.
I would say that. Well, then that's what I was going to say. It's like the entire film, it feels like there's no gravity to any of the physics.
Well, it's a hollow earth.
Thank you. Okay, I'm sorry.
The look on his face.
I'm sorry, every pedantic fuck in the world that's on this podcast. I love you, by the way. You're beautiful. I want to kiss you on the mouth. God damn. But everything is so, like, it's devoid of physics. It's just, maybe they're big, I guess. There's buildings there. It must be big. Here's two shots of actual live people next to these things.
No, it's funny you say that because, like, that bothered the hell out of me in Ant-Man Quantumania. Like, it's so bad, the sense of scale of anything in that movie. It's just, I don't know.
That's
something...
a perfect puzzle piece.
There you go.
Because I also never want to watch that again.
Yeah, that I agree with you on. But what do you have for your first piece, though?
So I would say, speaking of, and I can't remember the fucking name to give it either, but the serpent thing. Mm-hmm. That he gets the pink energy from. Which, you know what? I think breast cancer is an important topic that we need to keep talking about.
Yeah.
Godzilla Final Wars. Godzilla Final Wars is one of my favorite Godzilla movies. It, to me, David, I by the way, if you like this movie, that's great. I honestly don't give a shit. Actually, no, I do give a shit. I'm glad you like this movie. Because
thank you.
I think that every movie has a positive outlook that you can get from it.
Yeah.
There is always something you can take away. There's definitely things that I will take away from this, like as far as just like, you know, notes that I will apply in the future, consider. And that's fine. Still didn't like it. But I respect your opinion, and you're a beautiful man.
Thank you.
And I love your hair.
Thank you.
Godzilla Final Wars is everything that this movie really wishes it was, in my opinion, as far as my outlook on it. Godzilla Final Wars was, I think, 2003?
I mean, I knew it was 2000s.
Early 2000s, and you can tell because Matrix all over this bitch. It's insane. There's mutants who are like fighting all the monsters in the world. They don't rely on kaiju. Oh no, they're just super-powered X-Men motherfuckers who fight them out. And Godzilla Final Wars was meant to be this big grand finale to that period of Godzilla. And I also feel like we probably won't see another one of these for a while, so that kind of works out. But it's chock full of beasties, and one of them, and I forgot his name now because, again, I am quite stoned, but he is this long golden dragon guy who appears in one of the other movies as a side monster. He doesn't matter, but it's a really cool scene. Him and Godzilla fight. He's underwater. Actually, you know what? He might not fight Godzilla. I take that back. Maybe he only fights the mutants because there's a submarine that turns him to ice and breaks him apart. But there's an ice breaking apart death of a creature that looks just like one in there. I do not believe in coincidences.
What about the coincidence that this came out the week after Ghostbusters Frozen Empire?
Oh,
that the frozen beach scene?
Yeah, exactly the beach
scene. How much ice is there in that movie? But I haven't seen it yet.
A lot of ice.
A lot of ice?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
It seemed like with the frozen.
Put any of that in the trailer for this.
Yeah, because otherwise everyone would have been like, what the hell's going on? Why are these two movies coming out back to back? But yeah, Joe, let's go to a puzzle piece over there. What do you got?
Land of the Lost.
Sure.
The Will Ferrell Land of the Lost.
Oh,
that actually is a really good one.
Yeah, them going through the portal really reminded me of that. And I also thought that the dynamic with the what's his name from Bullet Train in this movie? Doing the podcast. I'm thinking podcast now.
Oh, fuck. Ryan Terry.
Ryan Terry Henry.
I'm thinking podcast from Ghostbusters. But he reminded me of like the Danny McBride and the you know what I mean? And then you've got I forget the actress's name from Land of the Lost, but you've got the British scientist, you know, kind of like leading the charge, you know. And
sure.
I also thought that the little baby Kong reminded me a lot of Chaka in that, where like you want to trust Chaka and they keep him along, even though he like seems like ready to betray at any second, you know, until he finally befriends him and then takes him back to his little like village where like the women of his village are just beautiful supermodels for Danny McBride. And then you also have the crystals. The crystals were actually in that movie were the gateway to keep portals open and closed and the energy source for the whole jungle that they were in, just like in this movie.
Damn.
And and I remember when that came out, that got a lot of flack for being CGI heavy when the original, you know, is like, you know, puppets and stop motion.
Sure.
And, but I, you know, Adam Wingard, he's actually a fan of Damon Packard's. Like there were actually, he's a really big fan, so much so that he was actually messaging Damon while making the first one. Like for ideas and stuff like that. And I was thinking during this movie that Damon, he's an underground filmmaker, Damon Packard. If you guys haven't heard of him, check him out. He's on this AI kick lately where he's making these AI shorts that are like absolutely brilliant. And it pains me to say that because, you know, being a filmmaker, being an artist, like the idea of AI is so scary and awful.
Sure.
But like Damon like makes a good case for it.
Yeah.
You know, and I honestly, this movie, the only live action thing about it were like the couple of actors who were in it. But to me, it was just an animated film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was a cartoon. And when you make a cartoon, the whole point of animating something is to do things in animation that you can't do in real life, whether it's like what you have the characters doing physically or the way you move your camera or the, you know, and I thought this movie utilized that to the max. And I like that zero gravity sequence. I mean, I thought that was just like spectacular.
Yeah.
You know, so as an animated film, which that is how it read to me, I was actually like kind of blown away by it in that way. So.
See, that, and again, you're allowed your opinion, and I think that that's totally valid, and I'm glad you enjoyed that sequence. I had a problem with that because it, again, it feels like there's no physics, and then at the end they just take away the gravity, and so it feels like an extra punch in the face as far as that goes. And to me, the best animation has impact, has physics, you know, like actually has like definition to it that is built into it through the animation. It's very true. You can't, there's things in animation you can't do. And a big part of that is the way that animation is made is like, you might have like a hand that stretches a little too far. You might have, you know, a coyote that can't catch a fucking break. But
because the physics of Roadrunner and Coyote are so sound.
That's
that we, like, I mean, like,
weird. Again, not the point I was making. Actually, and
it
also,
was. You were talking about the physics.
God damn, you're.
Look,
God damn.
I think to both your points, I mean, everybody loves the Spider-Verse movies and whatnot, you know,
yes,
lately.
And they're beautifully animated.
They're beautifully animated, but all kinds of wacky shit happens in them. There's no, like, sense of up or down, left or right, up, you know,
anything. I completely disagree.
Really? I think it's just pure. Like, anything can happen in those movies.
No, I mean, yes, anything can happen, as evidenced by things that happen in the movies.
Yeah, anything.
But again, they are weighted properly, and they feel, even though they are not, even though they are obviously a cartoon, you are in that world and believe that world, and believe that that is a thing that is happening because of the superior animation. And the beauty of that franchise is it is cartoon-like. Instead of being photoreal, they are allowed more leeway. It's kind of like Mothra is a good example. Obviously, Mothra originally is a puppet, basically, but the same principle stands where those puppets, or why is my brain not working what they're actually called? The suits.
The suits, whatever. Yeah,
I guess Mothra was a puppet. Anyway, back then, Mothra is very cute, right? It's not like a perfect one-to-one approximation of what a giant fucking moth would be. It's just an interpretation. And Spider-Man, across the universe, is an interpretation in style. And this franchise is technically a little handicapped by the fact that it started off as a film about realistic Godzilla. And not that it needs to stay that way. That's, I mean, you look at original Godzilla, it took, what, 3 films to get to King Kong? it got off the rails pretty fucking fast. But that's the important thing, is that a cartoon and a real-life object, and Godzilla's meant to, you know, be as realistic as possible, those aren't the same thing. They're different ways that you do that. And to me, again, it's fine that you have that opinion. I enjoyed listening to you say it. To me, that doesn't work. To me, that's boring and is just a lot of nonsense that doesn't have any weight to it.
Admittedly, I haven't seen a lot of, like, you know, the earlier guy. I saw the original Godzilla, and then right up until, you know, the recent ones of the last 20 years or whatever. And I probably saw a few of the other ones in high school. But the ones that I have seen from that in-between era are just pure silliness from everything.
There's
that I've
a
seen.
Lot of silliness, and I've watched a shitload of Godzilla in my time.
Yeah.
And there are times when that silliness works, and when it doesn't. Here's a puzzle piece. Since I've derailed the entire podcast.
Oh, we're off the tracks here.
Yeah. But here's a puzzle piece. It's another Godzilla movie. I'm sorry, I'm not very original. But Godzilla versus Megalon.
Okay.
And Godzilla versus Megalon is a perfect example of the silliest shit you can possibly do with Godzilla, but also keep it in its own little, you know, bubble of reality. And that doesn't mean that it has to be like our reality. Each movie has, or each franchise, I suppose, has its own reality that it then expects us to understand and just say, like, cool, that's what we're doing. Godzilla versus Megalon, it's basically this dude, his, I think, nephew, and then also his definitely heterosexual roommate. Mm. That's a joke about the 70s, not about gays, because they would hide relationships, but they're and it would be beautiful too. So in this movie, Atlantis rises. I don't remember exactly why it rises, but Atlantis rises. Actually, no, they don't rise. They send this extremely forgettable monster, kind of like the ice thing, to fight Godzilla. It's Megalon, and while this is happening, our roommates and the nephew fight criminals, and it's just like 2 or 3 guys who want to steal some piece of technology, some nonsense, and Jet Jaguar's in that one. That's the, it's Ultraman if Ultraman was from wish.com. we stan him. He is beautiful and he is great. But Jet Jaguar, fun thing.
It sounds like a lot of stuff happens in this movie.
Not really. Okay. Not really. That's the thing. There's probably, I don't know, 3 plot threads in the entire fucking movie. Mm. Whereas this has like a dozen, which obviously was not my initial point. That's a separate criticism of this movie. Mm-hmm. There's just a bunch of very lame conflicts ladled on to make it seem like stuff is happening when really there's not a whole fucking lot, in my opinion.
I guess so. But I mean, okay, you brought up, you know, 2 Godzilla movies. We already had 1 King Kong movie. I'm going to bring up another King Kong movie because
that's fair.
I think fair. King Kong rules. And I think I mentioned it earlier that this feels like Adam Wingard is trying to play with these characters. And that is exactly what Peter Jackson's King Kong is. He is just the biggest fan of the character and just wants to play in that world. He wants to see an updated version of King Kong fighting all these creatures and the adventure on Skull Island and all this stuff. And Wingard is just having so much fun doing this. You could tell in every frame of this movie, I feel like. And even if you don't like the movie because it's too far, you know, to one side, I guess, as far as the ridiculousness of it, you can't say that he didn't have a blast making this thing, just like Peter Jackson.
Well, no, I think, I mean, Adam Wingard, I think that's one of my, parts of my disappointment is I think he's a phenomenal filmmaker. I also, like, I was going to say The Guest, if you didn't, which you did it much better than I would have, so awesome. I love Adam Wingard. When Godzilla versus, is it Kong versus Godzilla? Godzilla versus Kong. Because King Kong versus Godzilla was
the old, yeah.
I wasn't a big fan. I thought it was fine. It was one of those, I could watch that, sure, kind of movies, which is perfectly good. That's not a bad thing. But I was hoping that after that he would, I don't know, have more to show for it. And I do feel like he had a lot of fun. It does feel like a kid playing with toys.
Yeah.
And like, if it wasn't for the technical aspect, which is, I mean, really mostly out of his control at some point.
Yeah.
I would really like it, but it feels like, you know, people always complain about the Marvel movies having these like bullshit fights that are just, you know, pre-vised years in advance. And that's, I think, the big feeling I got was that it feels like just business as usual. Hey, Adam, can you come in, do a few weeks, and give some notes to our CG team?
I feel like there's a much bigger sense of fun here. But what about you, Sam, as a big fan of King Kong?
I don't see them even being in the same realm. I mean, one was very stylish and artistic and a loving tribute, where this one was just balls to the walls, fun and silliness without anything that would even be remotely serious or having any depth.
Could you imagine showing this movie to the people who made the 1933 King Kong?
they would probably jump off the Empire State Building.
Oh my God,
now, I would like to say, though, that Adam is seeming to follow the same path that Josh Trank did.
Mm.
Because when he had a very small budget, he made a miracle out of the movie Chronicle, which threw him into making Fantastic Four, which, with an unlimited budget and all the superstars you could hope for, turned out to be a piece of garbage. Now, here we are with Adam, who was doing these low-budget films that were extremely creative. He earned the right to do these things now, and he is obviously having a very, very good time doing them.
Yeah.
But I don't feel that he's kept his artistic style in them. It almost seems like you had said about the artificial intelligence kind of a thing. This is exactly what you're going to expect it to happen. And he's just sitting back, maybe directing some of the actor scenes where there's no action involved. His style is not present at all, aside from, let's go for it.
I think that's fair that his style isn't present at all, but I still think he's just having a blast with it and giving anybody who wants that silly side, he's giving them what they want, and he seems to be one of those people.
That can be a danger for directors. Like, you know, I grew up on, I'm much older than all of you. Probably combined. So I grew up in the 80s era of Steven Spielberg not only directing but producing films like, of course, E.T. and Close Encounters. But then he did things like Batteries Not Included. He was involved with Inner Space and Harry and the Hendersons, things like that, which even represented him when he wasn't necessarily behind the screen. Mm-hmm. After those gave him the gravitas to do anything, he went into a very serious vein. And sure, you had some really significant films like Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan, which are always going to be considered to be classics.
Sure.
However, they're not the Spielberg that I grew up with. And I feel like I lost him. And I was hoping to get him back with the Fablemans, which ended up being him recycling Super 8. And to a much lesser degree.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually.
I haven't thought about that, but that's actually... I mean, I like the Fablemans a lot, but that's a really good point.
Yeah.
There are so many scenes in the Fablemans that are riffs on things that were from... I was like, this is scarring me now. I left the theater.
What you guys are saying about Adam Wingard is what people said about Spielberg when he made Ready Player One.
Oh, and I would agree to that as well. I thought I was so jazzed for that because there were so many things that were being brought into that I grew up with, even the Iron Giant.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sat there feeling like I had just run over a dog.
Talk about an AI movie.
I didn't dislike it as much as that. That's fantastic.
I thought the ending to that movie really exposed why Spielberg kind of stopped making magic. Like that, the ending to that movie is like the most like evil capitalist. Like him at the end, like he wins all that money in the game with the help of the people in his impoverished community who save him in real life, who stop the corporate bad guy. He wins all that money, and then he keeps it all and buys a mansion and fills it with all his cool stuff and has his girlfriend and his best friend who he found in the game. And what does he do? He shuts down the game for 2 days a week because real life is more important. It's like, you mean, so the game where you made your fortune, your fame, your partner, your friends, you shut that down for other people's access to while you live in your castle full of all your favorite toys and you let the community that saved you stay impoverished. I was like, that's a weird message.
And I
think it exposes a lot about Spielberg. But I think that this movie, though, I don't know Adam Wingard enough to know, before, after, otherwise. I know that this movie and the last one, to me, felt way more consistent than it seems to feel for you guys. But that being said, I feel that they're totally different from what we were getting before, even with Kong Skull Island and King of Monsters and the 2014 one. Which is funny, the 2014 one is actually the movie where John Landis told me afterward that a movie can be dumb and boring, or dumb or boring, not dumb. That's what he said to me as he walked out, and I'm very glad that they moved away from that. I think that we got like a sickness in our entertainment where like everything, where we equated gritty and real or grounded, and like, I don't think that any of that matters as much as there's like truth in what's happening. So like, you know, I guess I'll just start with the puzzle piece here, that like Pixar shorts, like how they're mostly silent, and this film, so much of it is played in silence, and there's so much that you're able to comprehend between the interactions that these cartoon characters are having. There's and I did find Kong really like moving and interesting in the film, and I felt the connections that Kong and Godzilla and all of them had with everybody else, and I think that is real filmmaking. I don't think that's pre-res fight scene stuff. And that is very different from what we were getting before in this series. Kong Skull Island, which was like really big fun, I didn't love it, but it's a different kind of movie than this. This felt like an animated film. It reminded me of like the glory days of the Pixar shorts. You know what I mean? I think he is communicating as a director.
My version of that puzzle piece is War for the Planet of the Apes, which obviously Planet of the Apes and these King Kong movies.
Yeah,
you know,
it's kind of hard not put a parallel.
Exactly. And that one being so silent for the vast majority. I mean, it's like a long movie. It's almost 3 hours long, and an hour at a time of no dialogue. It's just apes acting with one another. And I could have used more of that in this because it's so much fun, those sequences. I really had a good time with those. But, you know, we went on a bunch of tangents here. I do want to open it up to the crowd here a little bit. We do have some prizes. So anybody who has some puzzle pieces, I see one right here already, you're going to get. We have shirts. We got hats. We got a bunch of stuff. So what do we got right here?
I got a little bit of 2012, that Yellowstone Caldera movie with John Cusack and Woody Harrelson. And how the Woody Harrelson character was kind of like conspiracy theorist, and like the guy that she went to for help in this movie, he had, you know, all these ideas and was never proven right, and then he was more right.
Yeah.
Middle Earth stuff and all that.
I was trying to remember what movie it was that had that character happen.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. That was digging me.
And I feel like there's been a few of them lately, like these conspiracy theory nuts who end up being right about everything, or useful at least.
Well, that was Roland Emmerich, right? Who did
2012.
Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, you had like Independence Day. I was so happy at the beginning of this when the people on the facility in Hollow Earth were playing putt-putt in the office.
That reminded me of the opening scene with on the moon.
Well, no, in Independence Day, he's like, when the thing's coming, he's listening to R.E.M.
Yeah.
I was so happy to see that back. And then it started to feel a little too much like Avatar, and I got a little bummed out. But like, but yeah, Roland Emmerich, I think just in general, I think that he kind of like shepherded this in with Independence Day, like the big CGI summer blockbuster.
Absolutely. You know?
I was trying to figure out the golf thing. I was like, which movie is that? Yeah. And you're 100%
all the good ones.
Yeah. And I think Aliens, does Aliens have it?
It must.
Oh, it might.
Like, well, I mean, all of them are their James Cameron.
Yeah, that's true.
That's with the hat, with the Hawaiian shirt, you know, like that's all James Cameron.
Of course. Do we have any other puzzle pieces in the crowd here? Anybody else have one that they thought of? We got shirts. We got a bunch of other stuff here. I think we got one right up there in the middle.
I've never heard a puzzle piece. I don't know if this is technically going to be one.
All right.
But I know I found myself wanting, I thought about Godzuki, right? I don't know what film that's from, probably somewhere in the 70s or something like that. And I found myself hoping that at the end, that Godzilla and Shiru or whatever that other one was, that they would have maybe...
Maybe? Bang.
Yeah.
And then we would see a Godzuki next. Yeah.
For those like super anal and the like listening to this right now, it's Godzuki's from the cartoon. God.
The Godzilla cartoon?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm not familiar with that. I will say, like, I wanted this to go full nature documentary. Like, just give me all that. I'm in for that. that's a great one, right?
I love that they brought back Kong bathing, because that's how the last one started too. This one started with him taking a shower again.
Yeah.
There was a lot of showering in this movie.
That's great. That's
true. Which was kind of a throwback to the scene from the 76 with Jessica Lange.
Yeah. Oh, the funniest scene when he's blowing on her.
Right. He's been pulling her top down. And
my buddy and I, when we saw it the first time, we joked that, like, what if he, like, at the end just turned around and, like, from the. But also, the snake in this reminded me of the 76 Godzilla, too, when he fought the big snake in the water in this one. That reminded me of the 76 fight with the snake.
Yeah. That's great. Do we have any other puzzle pieces in the crowd? Anybody else have one? We got one right up there.
Yeah. The, like, veterinarian character kind of gave me, like, Guardians of the Galaxy vibes with the really music cues, and it was just like a fun adventure. I just kind of felt that with the music. Kind of reminded me of that.
Guardians of the Galaxy for the veterinarian character. I was also thinking of Steve Martin in Little Shop of Horrors. For that character. He was a really fun addition to this cast. I didn't realize so many people from Godzilla vs. Kong weren't going to be in this.
I'm kind of grateful for that.
Yeah, I guess so.
I could have used
you
one
only
less.
Need Rebecca.
Yeah, that's true, really all you need.
Like, I didn't like Bart.
No.
And
I'm glad that Millie wasn't in there and her sidekick. Those were...
Glad her mom's dead.
Yes, bye.
She was a villain.
Oh boy!
If I may, the character of the veterinarian with his Hawaiian shirts, his name was Trapper, which I got notes of him being Trapper John from the original MASH series, who was always out of uniform. Not the spinoff where it was played by Pernell Roberts, but Trapper John was like this pain in the ass who was part of the military team, but never acted like it.
The OG Elliot Gould.
That is fucking interesting. Quality.
I like it. Do we have any other pieces
out here?
I love
that you said the dentist, though, from Little Shop of Horrors. Like, now I'm just repicturing that sequence of him coming down the thing set to, you'll be a dentist.
Yeah. Oh, you'll be a thousand years.
That's so good.
My mom's got something.
Not really a puzzle piece.
Of course not.
Wait, let me get the mic to her.
I got it. It's just a little one. Okay. Did anybody... Thank you, Michael. Did anybody...
You can just talk at it.
Okay. Did anybody else think that Baby Kong's eyes reminded them of Precious?
You mean Gollum, right? Not Precious from the...
Thank you for
that was almost really fucked up.
We can get along. It's okay. Yeah. And back to Spielberg. If I'm not mistaken,
editing this episode is going to be.
And it was called Duel.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Yeah, with Dennis Weaver.
I wasn't sure who the actor was. Okay, the giant truck versus the car. Okay, that's it. This was 2 hours of my life that I could not get back.
She didn't like the last one either.
I'm gonna marry your mom, David.
Yeah, I know.
I thought you were gonna marry me.
At first, I was gonna do two towers as my
puzzle piece,
but then I switched it to Land of the Lost.
All right, that works. Anyone else got a puzzle piece for us, Robert?
No. I do. I'm going to throw this one out. Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Oh.
You have a civilization that's living underground that worships a weapon of sorts.
God damn, you're good. Keep him on. Keep getting him back.
I know. David. I need to get him back for sure. He's good. He's good. No, I like that. That's a great one to include. And in the last movie, I was so wondering how they would continue building on the ideas, because they peppered in all these little details about their society under there. You know,
you knew it was going to go somewhere, and it came to fruition here. Yeah. But that's what it was. They're there waiting for something to happen. And in the case of Beneath the Planet of the Apes, it was a human from another time that blew everything to pieces.
There you go.
But I think the effect was the same.
Yeah, right? I think so, too.
And I also, here's another one, considering Dan Stevens' character with a Hawaiian shirt. He also, if you put him, there was a sequence where he was standing next to Brian Tyree. What's his last name?
Henry.
Okay. Looked just like Magnum P.I. and his sidekick, T.C.
Mm. Oh, fuck. You're right. Yeah. God. Jerry, yeah.
I know you've brought up Planet of the Apes multiple times, but now that I'm, like, really thinking about it, in the original Planet of the Apes, it, like, ends with the Statue of Liberty with the monkey face and all that stuff. But at the end of this movie, we see the ginger ape come, and he's on a beach overlooking all these things. It's a very similar imagery of, like, this large ape overlooking humanity and, like, the same, like, a beacon of liberty. That same, there's a lot of parallels there.
I could see after he's been smashed in half, they could, like, leave half of him up, you know? Right. As a warning to, if they ever want to try this again. Yeah.
You are taking original Planet of the Apes
and melding it with the
Mark Wahlberg Planet of the Apes. And
combining them.
So the Statue of Liberty
although
was
I do
a
agree
human
about
face.
The beach imagery. That's good.
Yeah, no, that's a great one for sure.
My brain doesn't work right.
That's
fine.
it was in the Wahlberg one. It was the Lincoln Memorial, and it was with
the face. Right. With the
okay.
ape face.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. You're right.
This big bad ape.
Yeah. Scar.
Big bad.
Swinging that thing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I kept thinking WWE.
It was just, yep. I saw
they
some.
They had some kind of macho belt thing going.
I can't take credit for this, but someone on Twitter said it's like if the WWE made a Christopher Nolan movie. That's what this movie is like.
That's,
and,
that's funny.
I like those
His
that
whip
combination.
Work, it reminded me of Linda Hunt in If Looks Could Kill. That was the last time that I saw whip work that inventive.
Wow. I feel like in Underworld, isn't that like the villains?
I don't remember.
I feel
Underworld.
Like it's been. Yeah, that's why I'm asking. It's been,
I only
when,
saw.
When did that come
one.
On DVD? But I'm pretty sure they had like a whip.
Well,
thing.
Iron Man 2 also.
Oh,
I also
yeah,
got another another shot of imagery was from The Dark Crystal when they walk into the chamber and there was the purplish rock just spinning there. That was very much just like The Dark Crystal.
See, and that's why I want to see Wingard. I know he got his start in, you know, these smaller indies, but I want to see him do big, crazy shit like this, you know? He'll do something crazy like The Dark Crystal, you know? Like, I want to see more craziness out of him.
I would
love
to
ruin my memories.
Yeah, I know. That's
I would love to see Adam Wingard's Fuck You movie.
Yeah. Well, he's like making Thundercats, I think, right?
Oh, my God. What if Thundercats was just like an S&M-inspired, like, just odyssey? Still fun.
Yeah.
But just like... very just accent, all that just very odd
Dude's
costuming.
Got sex on the brain.
That would be wonderful. Well,
yeah, porn's great.
I think that's a good place to wrap up Godzilla X Kong, the new empire. Maybe, I don't know. But let's close this out. Everybody, thank you so much for being here. Sam, tell people where they can find you and your writing.
Please check out a website called Vegas411.com. It's kind of like all the other ones, but better. We talk about the things that people don't necessarily cover. Everyone else is talking about Adele. We'll talk about some local artists that would put Adele to shame, that sort of thing.
Awesome. Awesome. How about you, Mike?
I've got a YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Michael Keane, but not the guitarist for the Faceless. If you see him, that's not me. He has more money and drugs. And I mean, you have more money too, I assume. Maybe drugs. No, I don't know.
Neither. Actually.
I assume working for print media.
No, I'm only online.
Oh, you're only online. Okay, never heard of it. Sorry.
I do have an expense account, though, so you want to go to dinner?
Oh,
nice.
This guy definitely gets to be part of my polycule. but yeah, just find me and my movies that I mentioned at the top of the podcast. The Head, 2019. It's on Tubi. You literally Can't lose a dime.
Absolutely. Our very first live show was on The Head, by the way.
So yeah.
Everybody check out The Head.
And now it's my last live show.
Yeah, absolutely. Joe, how about you?
Yeah, bluemeanspregnantfilms.com is where you can find my work. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram now. My wife has been really building up our social media game. I never even tried to do that for years and wondered why I wasn't getting any traction. But yeah, you can find us now on Facebook and Instagram and bluemeanspregnantfilms.com. And we have Natasha Hall and Suffrage are both on Tubi and Amazon. And there'll be more soon.
Can you repeat?
I love Tubi.
That name's slower.
Blue Means Pregnant Films.
There's a lot of sex on this panel.
There is a lot of sex on this panel.
We just like to
that's
talk.
That's creation,
y'all.
Man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's right. What Blue Means Pregnant
this
is.
Oh, this is.
This is what these two are going to.
This is the end of our arc.
That? Yeah.
This is our arc. This is our arc. Realizing the thing we have in common.
Sex versus creation.
Yeah.
This is fucking, a lover's quarrel over here.
Well, everybody who's here, thank you so much. We will be back here at Maya Cinemas. Thank you to Maya Cinemas on April 18th for Abigail and then May 23rd for Furiosa. So hopefully we'll see you out again at another live Piecing It Together. And thanks so much for being here.
Hi, this is Wax Trax Records here on 2909 South Decatur. We buy all your old 45s, your old albums, any type of music memorabilia. Also, we sell music memorabilia, albums, CDs, and a lot. Come on down to Wax Trax, 2909 South Decatur, or give me a call at 702-362-4300. Thank you very much.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire. Thank you to Maya Cinemas for having us. Thank you to Sam Novak, Joe Black, and Michael Keane for an awesome live show and for holding it together when things got a little heated there. And thank you to everyone who showed up to the show. Like I said, it was our most attended one yet. And hopefully we'll just keep building these things out, keep doing these live shows and get more people out to have an open conversation about what movies might have inspired whatever movie it is where they're in the theater to see. And thank you to those of you at home for listening. If you're enjoying Piecing It Together, make sure you are subscribed wherever it is you're listening. And if you enjoy the show, maybe drop us a little 5-star rating and review, whether that's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, whatever it may be. It is very much appreciated. Also, if you thought of some puzzle pieces, I could tell you, I always do a little group chat with whoever my guests are going to be for these live shows. And after the show, we were already sending each other more puzzle pieces. So if you thought of any puzzle pieces, send them in. You could either do that on social media at Piecing Pod, in the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, directly on the episode on Good Pods, or just email me. My email address is on the website, piecingpod.com. I'd love to hear what you thought of for Godzilla X Kong, and I will read it on the next trailers episode where I read listener puzzle pieces. So please do get in touch, and hopefully we'll see you at the next live show. So with that said, let's close this out with a piece of music like I always do. And, well, you know what? Actually, I was going to go with some big, epic, giant, you know, dramatic piece of music to play to close this episode out to go along with the large scale of Godzilla X Kong. But you know what? Speaking of adorable little creature monsters that, you know, do all kinds of crazy stuff, I'm going to play something from my new comedy album of songs about my dogs and cats, the Pup Pups. The new album is called Variety Snaps. Comes out April 11th. But the reason I want to play something from it right now is to promote the fact that this coming Friday, April 5th, at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I will be doing a album listening party in advance of the release of the album next week over on Bandcamp. It's thepuppups.bandcamp.com. You can tune in, hear the whole album. We'll have like a little text chat going on so you can you know, follow along with some stories about the album. I'll also at the same time be doing a live stream on my friend Chad Clinton Freeman's Ham Show. So there will be links to all this in the show notes. Lots of pup stuff happening right now. We'll get back to all the epic, dramatic, instrumental music soon. But let's play it out with a pup song. And, you know, Godzilla and Kong are known for some pretty vicious roars, but I am going to go with an even more vicious roar with my dog Harvey's Barco. This is a song sung by Harvey. There's actually a music video on YouTube, and you can check that out at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/musicbydavidrosen. And this song is, of course, on the new album Variety Snaps. Another reminder, this coming Friday, April 5th, check out the live album listening party over on Bandcamp. It's thepupups.bandcamp.com. This is Barco. Hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
Barco, Barco. Barco, Barco. Barco, Barco, Barco. Barco. Barco, Barco. Barco, Barco. Barco, Barco, Barco. 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 Barco, Barco, Barco. Barco. Barco, Barco, Barco.
An All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.